92.3 WTTS, I'm Craig Shank with Elvis Perkins ahead of his performance in Bloomington in support of the Doomsday EP. I'd like to start out with an explanation of Elvis Perkins in Deerland. What led to the initial decision to tour with a full band, and how did you assemble this band?
I knew after finishing the first record that I was likely going to want to take it on the road, and I didn't really have the confidence or the know how to do it, just a man with guitar, nor did I think that would be the best thing at that time. So so that led to wanting to compile a band, and the choice was fairly easy. I'd been making music with these guys who later turned out to be Deerland for a while, like sort of before Ash Wednesday was recorded and as was being recorded and afterwards, and everybody sort of knows each other from long, long ago and from different moments in their life, like Wyndham, who plays the trombone and the keyboards and all sorts of things. He's my godbrother, like his mother is my godmother and my mother was his godmother and they were best friends and blah, blah, blah. I've known him my whole life, and he went to elementary school with Nick, the drummer, and they all went to school with Brigham, the bass player. And so Wyndham is sort of the fulcrum of the wheel, and everybody knows everybody through him, and we're old friends, and here we are.
You mentioned Ash Wednesday, and that's an album that was released in 2007. And I was drawn to this album initially because, to my ears, it's very subtle, and it strikes a balance between sorrow and hope. And on the new album, Elvis Perkins in Deerland, it has a sound and sort of a structure that reminds me of almost a New Orleans jazz funeral. So how do your songs develop, and how does the development of the song play into the development of a full album?
It's all sort of a mysterious process to me, and I'm not all the time thinking consciously about themes and what groups of songs are going to go well together or what makes an album. And the songs on the first record, they didn't have any real conception that they were going to end up on an album ever, let alone the one that ended up being made. And there were lots of songs that could have been on there that weren't, and some songs on there that I didn't expect to be on there, etc. I don't know, perhaps making anything or functioning as an adult civilian in the world entails some sort of pretending or playing it off that you know more than you do, but I feel okay telling you that I don't really know what I'm doing, and I'm sort of making it up as I go along in some sort of dream state. You know, in the future I may make records that have more of a conscious theme and write songs that belong together. I'm not sure. And there's some more of that going on the Deerland record than there was on Ash Wednesday. Sort of thing may progress as the records grow in number.
You mentioned the way that you approach writing albums, and you have an idea of what all of the songs are about, but the interpretation of someone like me or another listener, music critics, may be pretty far off from what you had hoped to convey through your music. So how does an audience affect your approach to music, if at all?
Well, I think it's one of the great wonders of music and any art form that it has as many lives as it does beholders. You know, you put 10 people in a room and you play them a song, they're all going to have 10 songs in their heads, you know, 10 different songs. So, you know, you can get wrapped up thinking about what the public or the people or whatever want to hear, but I think there's no way of knowing that, and there's no one thing that anybody's hearing, so sort of a fruitless endeavor to think too much about how a thing is going to be perceived, because you can never be in another person's mind, however tempting it is, of course, to not be in one's own mind and to try and be in the minds of others. But I think if something makes sense and floats in one consciousness, then whatever it means to anybody else, if anything, you know, lots of times songs or poems or movies or whatever, they don't mean anything. I mean, the words that we're using right now, they don't inherently mean anything. But if together the movement of the words and the music and the notes and if it's a film, the scenes, whatever, if it makes some kind of sense to the person who's at the helm, if it evokes some kind of feeling, then chances are it's probably going to have some life in other people, or it's going to be a living thing for other people.
And obviously, throughout your life, music would have had to have evoked some sort of meaning for you. So what led you to decide, this is what I want to do with myself, this is for me? What led you to a career in music?
I'm not even sure I've had those thoughts per se. I mean, you know, we're trained and in a way sort of forced to have these thoughts about, like, what am I going to do with myself? Like, it's a long run we're looking at here in a lifetime, you know, like, I got to do something to pass the time. I got to do something to feel alive. I got to do something to earn a buck. But I think they're all more or less industrial thoughts or, like, manufactured thoughts, and that, like, I'm not sure we belong being one particular thing, or it doesn't make sense to me or feel exactly right to say that I'm one thing, or that I'm this is what I am, or this is what I do, or this is what I will always do. From early on when I started playing guitar, I always had a means of communicating with it, mostly to myself, like making sense out of the nothingness with what was coming out of the guitar. So I've put a lot of time into it and spent a lot of time conversing, you know, sort of by myself, trying to approach some kind of successful communication or some successful output of information or emotion or something, in the sense that everybody has to do something with their time. It makes as much sense to me that I might be doing this as, you know, as anything else, I guess, for now.
I guess I'm trying to wrap my head around the idea of you being a musician and being drawn to something about the song. What is it about a song and writing music that you're just so drawn to that process?
Well, I think it maybe stems from an ancient feeling of mine that I'm not getting across, or that I'm invisible or something, or I always feel like I'm not going to get it right in normal conversation, or that, like, the kind of words that just, like, pop to mind that you are forced to use in everyday conversation, I've always had this impression that we're not really communicating, not necessarily you or I, but maybe that too, but just anybody on the street or on the phone or just talking about our lives with this language, there's a certain satisfaction that comes with feeling like I've made a successful communication through a song, and that maybe through that I'll have the experience of having gotten across.
And you mentioned overcoming the silence, or earlier you said sometimes you felt invisible almost. Does being on the road lead you to feel a little isolated, I guess, for lack of a better term?
It can. I mean, it's a strange way to live. I don't know if I'm necessarily cut out for it, or if anybody is, or what that even means to, you know, be cut out for something or not. It's isolating, but also you're surrounded by people 24 hours a day. So in a sense, that is isolating. But in the other sense, like, you have no time to yourself. So it's, you know, it's a challenge, but it's what's happening. It's good fun, too.
Speaking of challenges on the tour, what are some of the challenges associated with reinterpreting your music for the live setting?
Well, there's a certain sense that people want to hear what they know, whether that's a song from a particular album. There can be some resistance to a departure from what one initially responded to from a person who makes music. Like what we have on Ash Wednesday, what we have on the Doomsday EP or on the second record. You know, obviously there are threads that carry over, but I listened to Ash Wednesday the other day and I could hardly make sense of it. It seemed like another person, and I feel like there's some resistance to change.
When you actually go back and listen to your own albums and your own songs, or songs that didn't make the cut, if you ever do that, what's going through your head? Do you remember what you were thinking as you wrote those songs, or is it just like seeing a different version of yourself?
I mean, the memory of why a song was written is never far away. Like, it doesn't take much to remember why a song was made, or what it's made of. Mostly I have a hard time hearing the sound of my own voice, you know, which I think a lot of people do, you know, even when they, people who don't put themselves through the trial of making that their thing, you know, putting their voice down, but people who just like hear their voice on an answering machine or something, they're always like, oh my God, is that how I sound? There's some of that when listening to like a, you know, a nicely produced record where like the voice is right there for for all to hear.
And the Doomsday EP kind of showcases what sounds like more of a spiritual and gospel influence. And you recorded a cover of a Sacred Harp song for a movie soundtrack as well. So in what ways do you find it more challenging to work under the constraints of a certain style of music or a musical tradition that maybe you didn't start out working in?
Well, I don't feel it to be constraining at all. Like, I just liked those songs and decided to sing them. So there was nothing but freedom in that decision. Show business is funny in that you make a decision, like we, you know, made this decision to record these songs from the Sacred Harp because they're great songs, and you know, we have fun singing them. But then it becomes like what you're doing, and like, you know, we're talking about it now, and like I didn't plan on talking about it when the decision, which was just like, oh, that, you know, this is a good song, let's play it. I don't know much more outside of a song that I sing being something that occurs to me to be worth singing. We're inclined to read into things and to want to know. I mean, that's how our minds have been conditioned from the very beginning, to like figure something out and know what's happening and why it's happening. And I don't know, I have some resistance to that, I guess, because I don't really believe that we can know what's happening or that there's much value to knowing why anything's happening.
With every song that you hear, it's a different experience that maybe you haven't had, but in some way you can relate to.
Sure.
So what are some artists or songs that have had some sort of an impact on you?
You know, I love the bossa nova, you know, something to do with what we were just talking about, like knowing the meanings of songs. Like, you know, I don't speak Portuguese, but it doesn't matter. You know, I listen to a lot of African music, a lot of Indian music. I always want to know what these people are singing about, but because I can't know, or, you know, don't want to take the time to figure out what they are in fact saying all the time, I realize that it doesn't really matter, and that our words are the sort of least important aspect of the music. That's one of the you know, amazing things about music, is that it can be appreciated without knowing the words, and the substance of a melody, or the effect of whatever happened in the studio to bring all of these people together and all of these instruments together, is a thing that goes beyond language barriers and all of that. I'm influenced by, you know, too many things to list. These days I'm sort of on a vinyl LP binge, and I just like finding the strangest thing that has the least chance of having survived to make it to iTunes, or that, you know, that's not on CD anymore, and just to find these moments in time, these capsules. And yeah, the more time I spend in the music industry and see how it works, and it's a funny one, like I'm sure they all are, but the less plasticized and glamorized and advertised is the most inspirational thing to me.
You mentioned music crossing language barriers, and you just finished a European tour, didn't you?
It's true, yes. We went to Spain and France and Belgium and the UK.
Did your fans overseas, did you have any interactions with them despite language barriers or cultural differences?
They may have tried, but I didn't understand them. And it's funny, I've, you know, do my share of, you know, telephonic interviews before going over to a place like Spain or whatever, and a lot of the interviewers don't speak very good English, so that kind of heightens my sense of, I mean, when I'm doing an interview of any kind with a, you know, over the telephone or whatever, before I hit Indiana or Kentucky or whatever, I often have the sinking suspicion that, as I mentioned earlier, we're not having a successful communication, and anything I say is only going to be filtered through that person's experience, and then it's probably going to be misquoted anyways. And that sense is all the more heightened when you're speaking to somebody who doesn't speak your language. But there's a certain freedom to talking to the foreign press, because it's like, well, it's completely out of my hands now. Like, I could say anything and it wouldn't really matter all that much.
And what do you think is the thing that you're most proud of with respects to your music, or what was the most rewarding part of what you've been doing with music so far?
The past few nights I've encountered people who are coming up to me and saying that they've played my songs at their weddings. Like, that's happened two or three times in the past two or three nights. The fact that people would be playing it at their special moment when they're declaring their love for one another for the rest of time, that's pretty good, I guess.
92.3 WTTS, Craig Shank with Elvis Perkins. His latest album is Elvis Perkins in Deerland. The new EP is the Doomsday EP. Thank you for your time, Elvis.
Thanks, Craig.